You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It's an exciting day for a young guy who's earned this opportunity for what he's done in AAA. 2.55 ERA, 9-4, 14 starts for the Space Cowboys.
Oh, he could have. Yes, he did. He got the call. Maldonado flips the ball away as he dots up 97 on the outside edge. Marcus Semien didn't swing at a pitch in that first major league at bat against Hunter Brown.
It was a fun game, guys. Hunter Brown making his major league debut. He crushed it all year for the Sugarland. I always almost say
Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys.
I do miss the nickname Skeeters, but we do love our Space Cowboys here.
Six shutout innings, three hits, one walk, five strikeouts, a ton of ground outs. It was a fun game.
Yeah, it's good to see him hit the ground running. And look, it helps to go up against a team like Texas who sucks. The Rangers are not good, but that was a really good way to get things started in, considering, you know, the offense was leaving a little bit to be desired. You had to have somebody take care of it, and that was Hunter Brown for you. So I don't know that this makes me feel more confident in potentially playing him in the playoffs or something like that, or keeping him on the playoff roster, but that's a great way to start things off, and we'll see what happens in the next situation he's used.
There were a lot of really cool moments last night. So Hunter Brown grew up in Michigan and loved Justin Verlander, and Dusty Baker said that Hunter Brown said, well, yeah, I grew up modeling my game after Justin Verlander. I idolized him because Dusty had asked him. And when he said that, Dusty said, well, I have his phone number. Do you want to talk to him?
So, oh, nice.
You know, it's cool to be able to see Justin Verlander cheering for him, clapping for him when he got his first strikeout and whatnot. Sean, did you watch yesterday? Thoughts on Hunter Brown, number one overall prospect?
Yeah, I think it's interesting just having someone like this come up on a team who's probably going to win 100 games. And I think it does add a little bit of something to play for, to watch for towards the end of the season. I thought he was pretty good. I like Paul, I'm not expecting him to like take the ball for like a game four in the ALCS or anything. But, you know, he could maybe be a reliever, long relief kind of kid.
That's kind of what I would expect.
Yeah, if you had to bullpen a game or someone gets pulled after two innings and it's tied or something. Like, I think he's... he has the talent to be on the World Series roster, and a benefit of making your debut so late is that the book probably won't be out on him that quickly. So
I know I could see it kind of working. I almost wanted him not to play until like late September, so that there really was
September
no book
15th.
On him. But it was cool to see this. And look, I mean, we don't know where Justin Verlander is going to go, if he's going to come back. Lance McCullers Jr., obviously health has been a thing with him. There's no denying that. So it is nice to see a younger guy. And one of the prospects, again, knock on wood, only one game in, have great command and great stuff on Monday. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they did play the Angels. They won Friday 4-2. Saturday, frustrating game. They lost 2-1. And then yesterday, Sunday, their offense was on fire. And they won 9-1. Urquidy was great in that start.
Yep, and look, these are the kind of just pile-ups that you expect when you're going up against the Angels, too. It's the great perk of the Astros is that the division that they are in is not good outside of the Seattle Mariners. Every single one of those other teams is a team that they should be beating 2 of 3 every single time around. So, yeah, did it to the Angels, too, and they have a pretty firm command in the American League standings as far as having that number one seed.
Yep, they play the Rangers, and they're going to have an off day on Thursday. They then play the Angels again, the Tigers, followed by the Athletics. Okay, the Rays are on the schedule, the Orioles are on the schedule towards the end, and then the Diamondbacks. So safe to say, as we've said, but we can't say it enough, the Astros have a very nice schedule for the month of September.
Yeah.
Let's go around the league and talk about some of the other big storylines, particularly with the Yankees. Aaron Judge is close to Roger Maris's record, which is exciting, there's no doubt. But the Yankees in general have not been at their best.
No.
And that
calls
for a Yankees watch.
Ooh. Yankees watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Oh, but that's the same NBA playing so hot. What is she talking about? 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, huh? 1 × 1 × 1. Listen, it don't matter. Math don't matter. But, you know, my Bombers could be doing a little bit better. They've lost, what, 6 of the last 10? They're 6 games back of the Houston Astros. But it's fine. The American League East, they're up by a good amount. Oh, you think the Blue Jays are going to catch them? They're five and a half games back. What? When did that happen?
This is a deeper New York voice.
Oh, they're 5 games ahead of the Orioles. What is going on here? What is happening? I think, you know, that the Aaron Judge show is really important, but, I mean, what is going on here? I didn't even know that Baltimore had a winning team this year. What's going on? The Tampa Bay Rays are close? I think right now, when we take a look at the New York Yankees, the Bombers are going to be fine come playoff time. You know, 27 rings. Everyone knows it. But, yeah, these other teams are catching up. I did not see that coming. And it's interesting to see if you take a look at where they're at. The Tampa Bay Rays have been playing pretty well of late. Toronto's won 5 in a row, and both of those teams are within 6. I did not think we would see that by the end of the year. I figured that the Yankees would always have the AL East down. And, yeah, there's still a couple of weeks left. But, yeah, they are very, very close to being out of gas, it feels like. And it's very strange. Someone put up a blog talking about how fortunes have changed for New York since they got rid of Joey Gallo, who could not do anything except for strike out. Since Gallo has joined the Dodgers have had the best record in baseball. And since he has left the Yankees have been one of the worst teams in baseball.
All right, Albert Pujols, by the way, 5 home runs away from reaching 700 home runs. He has 28 games left with the Cardinals regular season to reach that.
Yeah, it would be something else to see him. This has been weirdly one of the best stories in baseball this year, though maybe not for anybody that's from Houston, seeing as you remember what Albert Pujols was with the Angels and before that what he was with the St. Louis Cardinals. He, I think, has more home runs against Houston than he has against anybody else over the course of his career, which is something that happens when you change leagues like the Astros did. But yeah, man, this has been very cool to see that he's back. I don't know if it's natural. I choose to believe it's natural, and I guess you just sort of take it from there.
Don't you think there's enough testing now to where we would know if it wasn't?
Do they even want to test
anymore? Do they want to test Pujols? I mean, they shouldn't.
Would you want to test him?
But the MLB is no fun.
It's nuts that this has all happened, too, since the All-Star game. Because before the All-Star game, I mean, I think people were like,
true.
He's still in the league? How? But ever since then, he's just been clobbering the ball.
I think that it would be cool to see Aaron Judge beat Maris's record. I am in no way a Yankees fan, and I am not an Aaron Judge fan. However, it's a cool storyline. Judge bet on himself with that contract situation, and now, quite frankly, is putting on a show.
I want to see it happen so that when he leaves in free agency, that the Yankees will be like, oh, he's not a Yankee great anymore. He's just like many other players, except for he will have made the choice to leave the New York Yankees instead of signing a long-term extension, which does seem, at least historically, to be very off-brand for them. They seem to always be the team that's like, yeah, we can afford anybody, but maybe that's not the case anymore. I can't believe that they drew a hard line with Judge as it is right now. And that was even before the season that he's having right now.
I had secondhand pain for Dylan Cease. He lost a no-hitter with 2 outs in the 9th at home in Chicago. Yeah.
I had a brain fart.
No, that's okay. Dylan Cease plays for the Chicago White Sox, was throwing a no-hitter and lost the no-hitter with 2 outs in the 9th.
I thought I heard that. I was like, wait a second. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Look, Dylan Cease was the guy that we saw not too long ago. It's kind of funny, and you feel bad for baseball, in that once football starts, everyone sort of like, oh, there's a no-hitter going on. Yeah, whatever. Okay, fine. You know? So we'll see, ultimately, if there's going to be any other major baseball headlines that take place during football season. How much attention will we pay to all of it? I don't know, but that was something else. I remember they showed it on the bottom line of ESPN. It was like, Dylan Cease has a no-hitter. Switch over to ESPN2. And everyone's like, nah.
I was going
to
say, did that happen like on Saturday?
I think so,
because
yeah.
I had literally no idea until you just said
that someone had it. Yeah, well, I was tracking it because I was hosting pre- and post-game. Jake Odorizzi, by the way, was scratched from the Braves lineup with arm fatigue.
I'm sure. Is that going to be a subject of the Killer Bees today?
Could be. Yeah. They love Odorizzi.
Yeah. Jake Odorizzi, very, very tough guy.
We have a call from Melvin who would like to talk about Aaron Judge and his home run record. What's up, Melvin?
Yeah, I don't want to see Judge break the record. He's a sign stealer. The Yankees are cheaters.
Ooh.
That record belongs to Roger Maris and Babe Ruth. Those are the true people who hold the record, not Barry Bonds or anybody else.
Why not Barry Bonds?
Old school, I guess. Not beyond old school. Old school would be Barry Bonds. This is old school. We're talking Babe Ruth.
I mean, the steroid era did like screw a lot of things up, but I don't know. For me, like, Barry Bonds is the most dominant player I've ever seen in baseball. And there's a part of me which is like, yeah, he probably cheated, but like, I kind of choose to remember the most dominant, terrifying hitter of all time as opposed to, I don't know, somebody else. I don't really want a Yankee to have the record either.
But obviously, this is talking about a Yankees record. It's funny that a Yankees individual team record is like the one that like stands out compared to other teams in their respective sports. Like, ooh, this record is holy. 61 home runs in a season.
It would be cool to see history. Wish it wasn't Aaron Judge. But again, I like that he bet on himself and he finds himself in this situation. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, so excited to have my guy Travis Johnson join the show to talk all things Texans. That's coming up. Don't miss it.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
I am so excited for our next guest. I love him. He's hilarious. He is a great steward in the community, a great Texans legend, does a lot with philanthropy, and is just fun. Travis Johnson, former defensive end for the Texans, joins the show. Hi, Trav. How are you?
Man, what up, Vanessa? Hey, Pauly G, when did you get back in town? And why did nobody give me the memo?
Dude, that's a bad job by me. Yeah, I got back here like 8 months ago, and I kind of just like snuck up and was like, hey, I'm here. Now I'm back on the radio. Classic.
When, I guess whoever just called me a minute ago, the producer, he goes, yeah, I got to put you on with Vanessa and Gallant. And I'm like, they got a new Gallant in town, huh?
We got clones. We're all over the place.
The last time we had a conversation, you were headed to Seattle.
Yeah, yeah. Things went not so great up in Seattle, so I'm back because I like it a little bit better here. And yeah, Travis, good to hear from you, man.
Man, how you been, bro? You been good?
Been good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking trash with you in person about the Astros and Dodgers when the inevitable World Series comes up.
Dodgers, man. You know how that
Come
is.
On.
Well, no, Travis,
did y'all see the out last night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, I thought it was – I mean, at first I'm thinking he was safe when they showed the angle, but then I had – like then all of a sudden they were showing pictures of Altuve's finger bent back with, getting tagged by the – it was a bang-bang, and it happened to be – I'm like, dude, New York is not going to call him out if they don't have an angle to show that he is out. You know what I mean? So with all of the cameras, I'm pretty sure they found one that said he was out, so – so I'm like, cool, he's out. Go Dodgers. You know what I'm saying? That's all I thought. That's
you were fighting
about
Astros fans. You were doing the close-ups. You were doing the zoom-ins of the finger.
Oh, yeah, just because I wanted to make sure I trolled all the Astros guys. Because, you know what? Because Astros fans are like, you know, they're borderline cowboy type. They're like cowboy fanatics.
They're fighting.
Damn. That's what they're on the brink of that right now.
There you go. Hey, Travis is starting the Tuesday morning out hot. Before we get into the Texans and the upcoming NFL season, I do want to ask you about your trip to Uvalde that you made with the McNairs and several other Texans, current and former players. You were really open on social media, which I thought was really beautiful, about how emotional and how tough it was. What was that experience visiting the Uvalde football team, talking to them, giving them new uniforms? What was that like?
Yeah, it wasn't on the card? Hello, yeah, he said, no, it was very emotional. It was very emotional. Man, as far as like, it was, I don't even know how to describe it, man. It was one of those things where the atmosphere and the people were so phenomenal, and I cry. Like, I'm a crier already. You know what I'm saying? I'm a crier already, but I literally cried all weekend long, man. Like, it was phenomenal experience. Like, it got you angry. It got you emotional, because, you know, for people like me who have kids that age, man, it's like, you don't want to see. The Texans are on point with what they're given. Mm-hmm. As far as, I mean, what can you do? What can you do in that situation?
Right.
And the Texans have continued to go, you know, above and beyond on so much that they've done. You know, bringing those guys down here for the game. To the uniforms that Nike helped donate, the transportation with HEB, like they're using all their partners and all their connections to make to make the best, I guess, to make the best out of the worst situation for these young guys, man. And these guys, like, the stories that I get, that I got was so, man, it's hard to describe, man. My thing's hard to describe. Because when you seeing kids who've lost both their parents in one instance, when you see a kid who didn't want to go to school and was killed, when you see it, and for me, it's, I remember the day like it was yesterday. And everybody's like, well, why would you remember the day? You know, outside of, you know, just another school shooting. Because I'm like, dude, I was in my son's, who was in the fourth grade at the time. I'm in his school.
Right.
I'm in his classroom. And they're giving away the end of the year awards. And, you know, it's funny because I'm talking to Wade yesterday, and me and Wade literally saw each other passing by in the hallway on the way to those same awards. Like, hey, man, I'll see you in a minute. You know what I mean? And then it became, well, once the thing came across my screen, I'm like, hey, pack your stuff. It's time to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it was so heartbreaking because these kids are my son's age.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, like, it's, man, when you see the whole situation, man, it's sad, it's heartbreaking, and it's angering all at the same time, man. And it's like my emotions have been all over the place, man, since I got back, man. Like, it's just, I look at my kids and I start crying. Like,
No, I think you did a great job, you know, you and the Texans, of being open. And like you said, what can you do? But adding some joy and donating the uniforms and doing the clinics was a really, really beautiful thing. All right, let's move to the Texans. As you know, they opened their season against the Indianapolis Colts at home. The Colts always put up a fight with the Texans. What have you seen from this squad that's new and improved with Lovie Smith compared to last year?
Well, I mean, for one, they seem like they're practicing with a purpose. They're playing with a purpose. They're running the ball. The young kid out of University of Florida, he runs that ball hard. Like, I mean, I laugh because, you know, my favorite running back of all time is Arian Foster in the Texans uniform. My second favorite is probably Dominique Davis. You know what I mean? But he was going by something else now. But those are probably my two favorite all-time running backs. Well, this kid right here, I had to tell Arian the other day, I'm like, dude, he's making a case of being number one. And I hate putting a Gator anywhere number one in anything, but the way he runs the ball is so hard. I'm looking forward to all of what they're doing. I mean, the organization seems to be running better. Everybody seems to, like, it's top notch, man. Like, it doesn't seem like it's Chucky Child's play, or it doesn't seem like it's a bunch of dissension in the camp. It seems like everybody's now on the same page. Everybody's now, like, when you come in and you're coaching, you want everybody to be on the same coaching points. You want everybody to repeat the same. You don't want the Patriot way of saying, yeah, this is how we do it, this is how we do it. But you want to make sure everybody is still toeing the company line. Everybody is doing the right things. Everybody is keeping it 100. You know what I mean? And I think now, when you look at this Texas organization, you look what Lovie has done. You look what Kyle and Hannah have done. You look at Ms. Jett. Like, you look at what they've done, and you look at what Nick Caserio has done in the front office. I think that's where you look at it and say, you know what? Everybody seems to be on the same page. And, right, you know, everybody goes, oh, we're undefeated in the preseason. I don't care about that. It's about how you play the games. You know what I'm saying? We watch them play the games. We watch them get better. We watch them run the ball. You know, if they can protect Davis, I think we win a whole lot more games than we're expected to win.
What do you think about Davis?
I think he's still growing. Like, he's a kid who, in the beginning of the rookie year, I didn't like much. Like, I'm like, oh, man, he's not that good. You know what I mean? But then when he first got in for Tyrod, you know what I mean? But then Tyrod comes back, he spectates, he sees the game, and he sees it from a different angle. And all of a sudden, he comes back in the second part of the last four games of the end of the season, and it's not the same guy. I mean, the ball is jumping out of his hand. He's looking like a professional quarterback. I mean, he's had his ups and downs a little bit in the pre, but we really couldn't get him as many reps as you probably wanted to get him in the preseason because he's really our guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had to explain that to people, like, dude, listen, yeah, you've seen a lot of Jeff Driscoll and all this other stuff, but that's because Davis is our guy. And like, we can't sit there and put Davis in, and if he gets teed off on, then what? You know what I'm saying? So I think this game is going to show us a lot, but I really like Davis Mills. I think Davis Mills can be our guy. Like right now, he's our guy, but I really believe if he shows me what I think he's capable of in these first four, in these first few games, this first quarter of the season, he's going to really make big leaps and bounds strides of his in his maturation to be that guy.
That guy, that franchise quarterback. Let's talk about the defense, since that is what you know best, and that's definitely what Lovie Smith knows best. What have you seen as far as his leadership, the way that the guys respond to him, the fact that he is, you know, this isn't his first or second rodeo as a head coach. This is his third. How have you seen the guys respond to him?
Oh, I mean, I think they're responding great. I mean, when you bring in young coaches that know, you bring in the greatest D-line coach in the history of the NFL and Jock Cisdale, I'm a little biased because that's my guy. You know, when you bring in Jock, one of our former teammates who's a hungry, young coach who's first time leading the room, and he leads those guys to 12 sacks in the preseason. You know what I mean? I think that tells you a lot about what he's doing in that organization. I think that tells you a lot about the coverage on the back end. And I think this team, I honestly believe, you heard it here first, man. I believe that the Houston Texans will lead the NFL in sacks this season.
Ooh.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And I really believe that we have some of the pieces together. We're talking about Stingley Jr., we're talking about Petrie. Those guys, those young guys can really shore up the back end for us. And then when you talk about the pass rush that we're getting from the front four, front seven, I think that I'm literally salivating at the mouth to be able to see those guys go out there and work this year because of what just, I mean, we got guys who are no longer on the team. We have, like, getting sacks in the preseason. That shows me that they're learning. It shows me that they're playing ball and they're learning the game. And it's literally priceless. And I really believe that this team is going to be everything. Like, I think this team, we're going to surprise a lot of people here in Houston. Everybody doesn't think, nobody believes that we can win games. Nobody believes that Davis Mills is the guy. But I really believe that this year, this team is going to notice the effort changes. Now you're gonna see the product match the effort. It's gonna be awesome.
I'm all here for it.
Yeah, we both are, and we appreciate your insight as always. Follow him on Twitter, guys, at TrapJ99. He may troll Astros fans, but he is also very funny, and he has a huge heart. Travis, thanks so much for coming on.
I appreciate it, Paulie. Hey, man, call.
We'll talk. We'll talk. I'll give you a call soon. Good to hear from you, buddy.
All right, more coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Happy Tuesday, y'all. Tom Petty, great song, Won't Back Down. Tom Brady will also not back down from playing in the NFL. He chose to return after initially retiring. And on his podcast, which I can't listen to because it's every single question is like, and that question was sponsored by Dove Shampoo for Men.
It's yeah.
Like very scripted. I can't do it, bro.
It used to be a radio interview that they would broadcast during Monday Night Football. And I'm sure that it will be perhaps back on the Westwood One broadcast of Monday Night Football. But yeah, and he does it with Jim Gray, who is just weird. Jim Gray has found a way to continuously interview like the most high profile names in sports, despite not sounding particularly skilled as a broadcaster. I think Tom Brady calls him Scratchy, which is a little strange.
Just like they're reading off a teleprompter. I don't get it. But he is your Lord and Savior, so I wanted your opinion on it.
He said something interesting, and it's about how you can use people talking down about you as motivation. And specifically,
this is an interesting topic.
About the offensive line. So on the podcast, he said he has shown his offensive linemen all of the naysayers after some of the injuries that they have suffered. Every time someone says they suck and they can't do anything, I've tried to show it to them and say, this is what they're all saying about you. What do you guys think? What are you going to do about it? And make sure they know what everyone's saying. I think that's important, you know? I think I've always used little different spites as motivation for me. I'm a really motivated person. It's interesting, though, that he brings that up because he's always struck me as somebody who does not pay attention to this stuff. He's always focused on what's right in front of him. So I've always wondered this about him. Obviously, he definitely takes things personally, holds grudges in the same way that Michael Jordan did. But at the same time, he is clearly looking for whatever ammunition that he can find to give to himself. So what actually is it?
Well, I think, look, there's a lot of, the NFL is full of quote-unquote ignore the noise guys, which is always hilarious because everybody's on social media. Nobody ignores the noise. And we used to see this and hear this with Bill O'Brien where he would say, I don't watch you guys, I don't read you guys. But then he would give an exact quote and say, it's like you wrote, Brian, yeah. Or it's like you said, blah, blah, blah. So we hear this all the time. I'm surprised he's using this tactic on an offensive line that is very injured and is going to possibly struggle. Maybe it's his way of thinking he can motivate them. I would see Tom Brady, though, to your point, as being more of the guy that's like, shut off your phones, delete Twitter for the entire season. Actually, give me your phone for the entire season.
Yeah.
Let's go win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, here's what Barstool Sports said about you. What?
I think that they're already pretty damn motivated. I mean, they're playing on a team with Tom Brady. They know that they might not be with Tom Brady that much longer. This could be their last chance to win a Super Bowl. I don't think that you need to go out and search for outside noise. So while I appreciate Tom Brady mansplaining motivation to actual professional athletes, I do think that there's a certain element to this where what works for him works for him, and what works for other people works for other people. To find this and to highlight it to your offensive line, I feel like it could just as easily serve as a bit of a distraction because you're like saying, this is what they're saying about you. You're going to let that happen?
Well, everything. So what motivates you? Because it is different with every person. Like, how do you motivate yourself or get yourself to be disciplined?
Whoa, damn, that's deep.
Yeah. Welcome to our podcast.
I know, right?
I'm Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend.
I have a live, laugh,
love.
The
Blue Witch.
I'm Emmanuel Acho, and this is how I make it through life. This is how I drive
if
a Mercedes.
If I want to motivate myself to go to the gym, I look at pictures of me when I was a little bit thicker.
There you go. Okay. See, that works. I don't have... I think the thing that motivates me the most is that I feel like I'm constantly disappointing myself, and that, like, constant battle that I have with myself, whether it comes to body image or anything,
yeah,
that's my issue. I always feel like I'm not doing good enough and that I can do better. And I think it's because my parents raised me to feel that way. When I got like an A on a test, they were like, that could have been an A+.
Yo.
Yeah.
All right. We are in therapy. Mm-hmm. But that might be Tom Brady too, your Lord and Savior, right? Always feels like he can do better. I think it varies person to person. I'm not the kind of person that would want to look at negative comments. But if that works for TB12, hey, that works for TB12. All right. According to Steve Sarkisian, he is not overly worried about one Alabama Roll Tide that they will be visiting this Saturday. Here's Sark on that competition. Steve Sarkisian.
I think one thing that we have to be careful not doing is overanalyzing and overthinking it too much. It's kind of like being a pitcher, man. Sometimes you got to throw your best pitch and not throw your fourth or fifth pitch, you know, just because you think the guy's going to hit your best pitch. And so we got to be mindful of that we don't try to overthink it and outsmart ourselves. We got to throw our best pitches and see if it's good enough.
Don't overthink Alabama.
No. It's interesting that he's saying that too, though, because he's saying that we're not going to be judged by playing Alabama, being 19-point dogs to Alabama for this game coming up on Saturday, but they are. And Steve Sarkisian in particular is going to be judged by this. Look, you want to make some of the most impatient fans and boosters in college football actually have faith in you, you need to show a competent product on the field. And you can say all you want, oh, well, Steve Sarkisian needs time. BS. Tom Herman had time. Charlie Strong had time. Both of these guys, post-Mac Brown, have sucked.
So you don't even think he gets a year of like a grace period or 2 years of a grace period to recruit and to build kind of his team the way he wants it to be?
That's
what some people say.
He, in a way, probably should get that, but this is the reality. Like, you're playing Alabama and you can't look like crap because he didn't look good last year. I mean, they were embarrassing last season. They were teams that, what, losing to Kansas again? Like, that stuff, when you can't even show up against Alabama, theoretically, and then you're losing to the Iowa States or the Kansases or the Kansas States of the Big 12, like, that reflects on Steve Sarkisian. So he can say this if he wants, but this game will I think, be a pretty true indicator of how much grace he actually has here. And I think they have to, at the very least, not get their doors blown up, which definitely feels like it's a pretty safe assumption will happen on Saturday.
If you weren't with us at the beginning of the show, we did talk about the Cardiac Cougs 3 overtime, that win against UTSA 37-35. Guys, just quick impressions, things that you noticed. Obviously, UTSA, let's give them credit where it's due. They're a solid team. Hopefully the rest of their schedule, which is not that bad, hopefully they're able to get some cleaner, more disciplined wins. Clayton Tune, I thought, looked good, though.
Yeah, that touchdown, he had to, or two-point conversion.
Two-point conversion, technically.
I hate the new overtime. It's so dumb. But anyway, that was a hell of a play, an impressive flip. That's probably the best team they're going to play this year. I mean, maybe Cincinnati is better than what we saw from them against Arkansas. Maybe that was just a reflection of, hey, you're playing against an SEC school. It was a good weekend for the SEC. But I feel like this is probably going to be one of like the two toughest games for UH all year. And I think that 11 wins is definitely possible. And it's a shame that the college football playoff isn't expanding because they're probably not going to get in. But I think that 11 wins is definitely on the table for them this year.
Texas Tech is up next this Saturday. And then they have Kansas, Rice,
yeah,
Tulane, Memphis, etc. So they definitely have a pretty friendly schedule.
Yeah, no, their next toughest game, I mean, maybe Texas Tech, we can talk about whatever, if you think Texas Tech is better than UTSA or whatever. But their next toughest game, the toughest game on the schedule, is going to be the AAC championship game if they play Cincinnati.
Like, yeah.
Like, Luke, it's already until December is their next toughest.
Didn't they put up a fight against Cincinnati last year, though?
Yes, I think they were leading after like the first quarter or something, or they're down 7 at halftime, something like that.
And no Desmond Ridder this time around, like, and no Sauce Gardner too. I mean, that Cincy team had so much talent. I'd say it's not talented anymore. It's just not that talented.
For the next 10 games of their schedule, they should be favored every single game.
They came back against a 14-point deficit, and although, you know, you don't like to see them down that much as far as the lead goes, that does show that they can come back, that they can rally the troops. And the best tweet of the night came from, I think, Barstool. Bad night to be a Red Bull and vodka, to which Dana Holgorsen quote tweeted it and said, can confirm.
Yeah, you would have a good night after going to the Alamo Dome. You know, you come out of the Alamo Dome with a victory, it's one of the toughest places to play.
Yeah.
It is weird that there is a team playing at the Alamo Dome.
They lost Marcus Jones. They lost some guys to the draft that were really solid players. We talked about Grant Stewart 2 years ago, some of their best players they've lost, and they've been able to retain talent. They've been able to get wins. And like we said, their last year in the AAC, they could definitely make some big moves this time. All right. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, an interesting game day segment plus our garbage time segment. There was a coach fired over the weekend, and it was unexpected in the sport of his choice. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So we had some big news in the soccer world. As you know, Soccer Matters is on this station, so we do cover some soccer here. The Houston Dynamo FC parted ways with Paolo Nakamura, Jimmy Nielsen, sorry, Glenn, if I butchered that, and Chris Martinez. Their head coach was in the middle of his first season, and Dynamo FC let him go. Pretty dramatic news in MLS.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the many reasons why it's been so hard to really support the team of late. I mean, they've just struggled, and they make decisions like this too, where how can you feel confident about the direction of the organization when you're that quick on the trigger, or when you just screwed up on a hire bad enough to feel like you needed to part ways with them before the season's even done? I mean, shoot, we got still like a month left, I think, in the MLS season.
I know, and here's the thing that's a bummer. Soccer is so big here because Houston's such a diverse city. The games are so fun. If you haven't been to a Dynamo or a Dash game, you need to go. There's the Brigade, the music, all of that. The Dash won the NWSL Cup. So soccer needs to be successful here. So hopefully they make moves that are conducive to a more successful environment.
Yeah, I'm looking up this guy because, A, yes, bad on us. We buried the lead. Houston's professional coach in the city of Houston got fired, and we didn't cover until the last segment. But I was waiting to see if there, like, is there some sort of Urban Meyer style scandal attached to this to get fired in his first year?
No, there wasn't that women's league, if you remember, in the women's soccer league last year. There were with the North Carolina Courage.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of issues with coaching and whatnot. I don't believe there is with him.
Yeah, because he took over, I think last year the Dynamo were also towards the end of the standings.
Yes.
Like, and so to not have it figured out in the middle of year one, it is surprising.
I liked Tab Ramos. I understood that when he got fired, but I liked covering Tab a lot. This new guy was supposed to bring a breath of fresh air. The air was apparently not fresh.
Not fresh.
And now,
Paolo Nagamura.
Hashtag soccer. All right,
man,
it's time for
stuck up pretty quickly.
Garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
They need to score more goals,
I'm
Vanessa.
I'm a soccer expert.
They
what
need
can
to
I
score
say?
More goals than the other
air
team.
The was not fresh.
They should also get rid of FC. What is that?
So
just the
good
Houston
question.
Dynamo.
When I was working in local news, they made a big deal about
not
new,
European
about new branding,
yeah.
And it was them adding FC to the end of their name. I thought it was going to be like a new logo, a new.
All the MLS teams are just half stepping when it comes to the name. Either it's the Colorado Rapids or the, you know, LA Galaxy.
Real Salt Lake.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, like either all be San Jose Earthquakes and like, you know, like American team style
right.
names or all be
you're not
FC,
European.
FC. Well, just choose either one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't care which one you choose, really. I don't like Nashville SC. Don't care.
Yeah.
But then to also throw in like, again, just Houston Dynamo.
Yeah.
It's a
yeah.
weird mix.
Portland Timbers.
Miami CF. What is going on? Orlando City SC? Oh.
Soccer
but
club.
Is it football or soccer?
Yeah.
Get it right.
Again, I just everyone, get on the same page.
See, I don't think you can call it football here in America, can you?
Well, some teams call it FC.
Yeah, if you're already swaggerjacking the way that, you know, English and Spanish and French teams name their teams, then you can, throw on FC. But you can't have a league where it's both FC and SC, and the name of the league is Major League Soccer. So I feel like we already tipped our hand on
you
which way
make
we're
decisions.
Leading.
Atlanta United FC. Pick United or FC. Rip off your European one at a time. Jeez. Nashville SC, but Atlanta FC. This is the SEC, I thought. Is it FC or SC?
He's getting very angry.
Yes, this is stupid.
I know, you've been
have you ever
screaming.
Looked at the MLS names before?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you have?
I lose my mind every single time I see it, and I forgot that the Houston Dynamo is now Houston Dynamo FC, which is so stupid. You're the Houston Dynamo. You were the Houston Dynamo when you existed, when you won championships. But a rebrand's going to make them not fire their coach after one season.
How about
season.
The women's? Washington Spirit, San Diego Wave, Racing Louisville, Chicago
Racing.
Red Stars, OL Reign, R-E-I-G-N. Portland Thorns.
See, that's at least slightly original.
So the
yeah.
women's
at
league
least they're
for
all
the
on
most
the same
part
page.
Seems
yeah.
to be, yeah, it seems to, yeah, Angel City, Houston Dash.
Well, when they first started the MLS back in the mid-1990s, every team had a nickname, like the New England Revolution or the Colorado Rapids, the Chicago Fire, the
Philadelphia
Columbus Crew,
Union.
DC United. It was the Tampa Bay Mutiny. And then all of a sudden, they were just like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to put in FC or Real for a team in Utah. Noted Spanish population living there. Goodness gracious. Going to rip off Real Madrid. Like, that's why they're doing that. It's a ripoff
yeah,
of Real
it is.
Madrid.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
MLS
sorry.
Needs to try to be its own thing because it's never going to be. It's like the stepbrother of soccer. Am
yeah,
I right?
Just choose a lane.
Right.
Go with it. And
choose
Paul, wait, just to wrap up. So you're against the way they name teams, Paul?
Yes.
Okay.
Very.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got
sure.
unclear there for a second.
Okay.
I thought you seemed like a huge fan. John Daly was on game day, and it went about as you would expect. Here's Daly.
For John, why don't you start us with the Hillbilly headlines?
Well, I'm not going to lie, I'm John.
Was anyone surprised?
Not at all. Did you guys see Jack Harlow? First class.
So Jack Harlow is the guy who was College Game Day last week,
yes,
right?
Yes, last week, yeah.
What? Wait, does he sing Glamorous?
No, but he sings First Class, which has Glamorous sample. It samples Glamorous.
So he stole
and
Glamorous.
And I can put you in First Class. Well, he didn't steal it. He sampled it.
He sampled it. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can legally sample something.
You
can,
how much do you have to pay to sample something?
You have to pay them. They have to be listed as a songwriter on your song.
Okay.
So Fergie or Fergalicious or Stacey Ferguson. Hey, Stacey is listed on First Class, I believe.
I don't know what Jack Harlow is. I don't want to know either. I don't.
What's popping? Brand new whip just dropped in. I got options. I could that like Stockton.
Oh, wow. Okay. Assist that. Yeah, because that's what John Stockton
did. You one of the words you believed was pass. One of the words
you believed. I could pass that like Stockton.
One times one times one. this is... The people that they're bringing out for this, it is interesting. But I all these like random heartthrobs that of today, like I don't know who any of them are. Like
Carlo is a massive Louisville fan too. So okay. The crowd and like massive, like reps Louisville jerseys. So the crowd wasn't into it. Louisville. It's Louisville. Louisville.
Yeah, I can't wait until we start getting to the meat of the SEC schedule, and then it's like country singers for three straight weeks.
Oh yeah, but like Brad Keith and Toby Paisley and all those.
Oh, just
Luke Bryan's there three Should've weeks in a row, and people don't notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should
We're coming to your city still. We haven't gotten there. It's been 20 years.
Yeah, I don't really. It's not a bad impression.
I don't get, Jack Harlow and Harry Styles. Like, explain them to me. Like, Harry Styles.
I'm not up on Harry Styles.
Is he a musician?
Harry Styles was from One Direction, the boy band, and he's, like, broken out on his own.
But he's
Jack Harlow's a rapper.
Is okay. So
they're completely different.
Yes, one guy came up with a whole bunch of English white kids. The other one was discovered by DJ Drama.
But one of them's dating Olivia Wilde. Harry Styles allegedly is dating Olivia Wilde.
Yeah, and Harry Styles.
And there was beef
with his ridiculous collar that he wore to whatever the hell happened last night. Also spit on Chris Pine, who has a lot of hair now. So. That's your celebrity update, and I still don't...
Has no idea what's going on.
Harry Styles, I don't get why he's a thing. Everyone's like, oh, Harry Styles.
Sugar. Ha, that's all I know by him. speaking of celebrities, Tyreek Hill's podcast has really broken out. I think this is manufactured beef, but he DM'd Jake Paul's girlfriend, flirting with Jake Paul's girlfriend. And so Jake Paul called him out and asked if he would like to fight.
You know, that makes sense. That's how life should work these days, you know? If you're upset about someone, challenge them to a fight. You know, the good old-fashioned way. Bring back toxic masculinity.
Bring back Paul's way of solving
things. And Tyreek Hill should be like, in 5 years when I'm out of the league, all right?
Right.
Like, let's not, like, the season's about to start.
Here's
I'm not going to fight
with Tyreek. At first, it was like, okay, he has one controversial take a week. And it worked. I mean, he was saying Tua was better than Patrick Mahomes. We were talking about it to his credit. This is too, now that he's connected with the Pauls, it's too entertainment, too wannabe. If I'm Mike McDaniel, I'm telling him,
it's also
not
too
during
obvious.
The season.
It's obvious what he's doing.
Yep. And he's going to walk right into, I think, some very layup jokes from the Pauls, too.
Yeah, that's
given his track
very
record.
True. Yeah, very true.
Involving violence.
Researchers studied the behavior of zoo primates during and after lockdown, and it turned out that baboons had more sex when zoos and safari parks were closed during the first lockdown.
So they like privacy too.
Yeah. So apparently it's a real thing with animals.
That's not something I ever would have thought of, but that is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question, is who was the one that decided to put this research together? Were they like, oh, let's... see if they're banging today.
The Paul Gallant of the zoology world.
No, I resent that accusation.
They're waiting like, I have this really cool baboon hypothesis that if we stop watching them, they'll have sex more. But we can't have zoos closed for long enough. And then COVID happened. He was like, aha, perfect.
So
this is what I've been waiting for.
Now they have more baboons. Does that mean they can charge more like for the increase in the baboon population?
Well, I don't know if they're just having sex recreationally or...
Ooh, that's true. Yeah. They do have it for the fun.
We end our Garbage Time segment with a cougar update. No, not on the University of Houston. On Larsa Pippen, who was spotted out with Michael Jordan's son, Marcus Jordan.
What? That's amazing.
Larsa Pippen is 48. Marcus Jordan is 31. 17-year age gap. The Pippens divorced last year after 14 years of marriage.
Nothing wrong with an age gap. You know?
No, I definitely don't have a problem with an age gap, but the fact that it's Larsa Pippen and she's been so involved with different athletes.
Yeah.
MJ's just telling his son, go ahead.
31's pretty old for Lars Pippen. That's on the older side.
That's true.
It's pretty interesting to see how violent the back and forth war between Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen's been ever since The Last Dance came out. But Pippen has lost like every single battle.
Do you think Michael Jordan's been there, done that, and is passing it off to his son as you're the
next? That would be weird by her, right? That's a line.
Stranger things have happened. All right, Killer Bees up next. You got Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham. Thanks for hanging with us, guys.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.